Hello, friends. Check out Paranormality Magazine. It's a community-based project born out of a love for the strange, unexplained, and paranormal, as well as a fascination with the people and creators that make the community what it is. Exploring all 40 subjects from phantoms to UFOs and every cryptid creature in between. Their global team collects stories, conducts interviews, and reports on the cutting-edge paranormal projects that are driving the community forward. A digital subscription to Paranormality Magazine is only $3.99 a month, with print subscriptions also available. You can use coupon code FKN and get 10% off your subscription. It's the best way to support independent, community-based paranormal projects like ours and the ones we feature. Just click that link in the description to get started now. Welcome back to Beyond Classified. I'm Chris Matthew. Today my guest is Trey Hudson. He is director of the Oxford Paranormal Society and its Anomalous Studies and Observation Group. He is an Eagle Scout and former Army intelligence officer. He has a psychology degree from the University of West Georgia, where he studied under the likes of Dr. Bill Roll and other luminaries. He has 30-plus year career as a U.S. government security specialist, specializing in security of sensitive assets, anti-terrorism, security of weapons of mass destruction, emergency management, and other specialties. Trey, welcome back. How you doing?
I'm doing great. Doing great. Staying busy, making sure I have plenty of bail money in case I ever need to, bail out of jail. Got your phone number on speed dial in case there I need some bail money from you. So, but no, doing good. Getting busy, getting ready to transition into the next phase of my career, and just things are busy, hectic, but good.
Awesome. Excellent, man. Good to hear it. It's been a while since you were on. Last time you were on, it was after the UFO Mega Conference in Laughlin 2021, I believe. Had a great time there. Now, I'm looking forward to getting some updates about your research and some of the unexplained happenings at the Meadow, which is, for those that aren't familiar, mega paranormal and anomalous hotspot in the southern United States, from UAPs to cryptids, portals, and all manner of high strangeness, and you and your team have been investigating there a few years now and have documented some incredible experiences. I can't wait to get into some of the latest data, but before we do that, remind the audience just a little bit about your background and what led you to the research at the Meadow.
Oh, that's a great question. My background, what I tell people is I'm an ordinary guy, but I've just had some extraordinary opportunities. I'm nobody special. I am a Eagle Scout, grew up in the Atlanta area, attended the University of West Georgia, had a chance to study under some of the folks like Dr. William Roll, Bill Roll, famous parapsychologist there, and some others. And, graduated, I was commissioned as a U.S. Army intelligence officer in the reserves in 1987, was trained in that. And was a branch certified, all source intelligence officer. Went to work for the government, and been doing that for 34 years. I'm glad to say that I will end that career in April. So, I'll be retiring in April and move on to, much, much different pastures. I've done everything from, protection of weapons of mass destruction, intelligence, counterintelligence, physical security, emergency management. I did a tour in Afghanistan as a, anti-terrorism and operations officer. So I've done a lot of interesting things. The paranormal thing is kind of an interesting track. Is I grew up in the 70s, watching shows like In Search Of and Project UFO and, all of these just wonderful TV shows. And then you started seeing a lot of the books come out, like Charles Berlitz's, Bermuda Triangle books, Von Daken's Chariots of the Gods. Of course, a lot of the John Keel books and all were already in press. I grew up reading those, reading magazines. I would pester my parents for books and stuff. So I always had like a really rich interest in this. And then, of course, going to the University of West Georgia, they have a transpersonal and humanistic program there, which does not shun the paranormal. And I'm happy to say I've had a chance to go back and lecture there within the past, year and a half. And, they've got a full-blown parapsychology lab, and also they're still, really doing that. But like so many people, doggone it, life gets in the way of living. So, once I started my career, got married, had a family, I pushed the paranormal and interesting stuff to the side and led the, kind of the existence that most people do. I came back from Afghanistan and was able to link up with a local paranormal research group and got back into it. My background, surprisingly enough, is I'm a paranormal guy. I'm a paranormal researcher, ghosts and haunts and stuff like that. What got us interested in the meadow was very interesting. It's one of those kind of things that you stumble across, but there's a little bit of hard work on the front end. We were doing a lot of research into the areas, haunted locales, haunted geographical areas. Back in the late 2000s into the 2010s, is the paranormal stuff kind of started waning. We used to be a member of the Taps family, so we'd get a lot of referrals. And then, everything just sort of dried up. And I made the decision, because I had taken over leadership of the paranormal group, Oxford Paranormal Society, and decided that we really needed to start, shaking the bushes, both literally and figuratively, to find some things that are a little bit outside of our comfort zone. We're used to going into haunted houses, buildings, recorded and experienced some amazing things, absolutely mind-blowing things. But we wanted to expand our horizons a little bit. So I started researching haunted locations and found a mention of a haunted road. It was one of those places that, the folklore is really rich, and the locals, we had some people tell us that the locals would say, don't go down that haunted road, them haints will get you. And you being from Louisiana, you understand the really rich cultural history here in the South that we have, from our, Scots, Irish, and in Louisiana, the French influences, the European influences with, Celtic, legends of, the Fae and all of that. And then, the Irish legends of, the wee people. And of course, from the mainland Europe, the Will-o'-the-Wisp and some of that stuff. So it's a very rich history down here. So we started researching this haunted road and didn't see a dang thing. Not a thing. Skunked, just totally a waste of time. So I was really rather disappointed. We had been out there, and it was in 2016, a cold January evening. And it turns out all this stuff that was hopping and popping was back in base camp, which was about 15 miles away from this haunted road. And one of my colleagues, Bob Wilson, who you met at the MegaCon, he had just an amazing UAP sighting, just really, really cool. And what led into the meadow is the meadow is about a quarter of a mile from where we were camping that night. And, being an open area, we said, there's nothing special about this area. It's just kind of open. It's broad. We can set teams out there. They can see anything that moves across it. We can see the sky because, the trees are open up above us. It's like a bucolic, mountain field or meadow. So it's actually a beautiful place. And it turns out we just sort of stumbled into this. And what's neat is, since we've been doing more research, we've expanded our footprint, our research footprint a bit, and we found other similar fields and areas, and we're finding other instances of extreme high strangeness in some of these other areas. So it's been quite the adventure. And people always ask me, are you still researching? We were there in February. We were there just a few months ago. So yes, it's about every 2 or 3 months we have an expedition. We go out and research that area, and to this date, we haven't been disappointed.
Excellent. And this area is somewhere in Alabama, correct?
I will narrow it down for you. I will give you a specific location. It is east of Texas and south of the Mason-Dixon line. So it could be in Alabama, it could be in Georgia, it could be in Louisiana. I've had people ask if it was in Arkansas. You know, it's somewhere in the Southeast. And, you know, I always, whenever I lecture on this stuff, I have a big slide that just says apology. Because people are like, you know, why would you tell us where this place is? Well, discussing sites of high strangeness with people whose research locations have been outed, they talk about the continuous frustration of trying to deal with people coming on into the area, thwarting their research. And I had an incident that really drove that point to home that happened actually in the Uwharrie National Forest in the Carolinas. I was out with a pretty well-known Bigfoot researcher. And this place is called Yates Place. It's a pretty well-known campground there in Uwharrie. And it was featured on one of the Bigfoot shows, and I can't remember which one. You know, there was a really cool sighting interaction there at Yates Place Campground. And during the TV show, they specifically mentioned Yates Place Campground in Uwharrie. Well, we got there, you know, like Thursday evening. I set up our camp. We're pretty much the only ones there. And literally the next day when I woke up and poked my head out of the tent, there were 50 campsites occupied. And so when we would go out at night, it's like, you know, are we detecting other people, you know, on our FLIR? Or is this a cryptid? Or, you know, are these wood knocks and howls we hear other people wood knocking and howling? Or And it just got to be a circus. So, you know, when the meadow started becoming so active, you know, so productive, I made the decision, you know, right or wrong, that I was going to keep the location a secret. Now, what does that mean? Do I hoard it to myself? Absolutely not. I'll have people come out and visit. They're required to sign a non-disclosure statement, non-disclosure agreement, an NDA. And the only thing that I stipulate in the NDA is your experience here is yours. You know, I've been very transparent with what goes on there. You know, I wrote the book. You know, I try to let people know what's going on out there. The only thing I haven't shared are some of the videos, and that is basically due to a contract obligation I have with something going on. But I do show the videos, like, you know, at the conferences and stuff. So I encourage people to share their experiences. I've had some guest researchers, some folks you may know, Katie Page, formerly Katie Grabowski. She came down. She's actually researched down there a few times and has been witness of some pretty amazing things there. Matt Delf from Mountain Empire Cryptid Research up in Virginia. He comes down quite often. My mind just went completely blank. Gentleman that wrote Where the Footprints End.
Joshua Cutchin. Okay, yeah.
Joshua Cutchin. Yeah, I've actually been in contact with him.
Oh, he's great, yeah.
Yeah, he is like, oh, you know, every time, you know, I get something and I send him an email, I'm like, doggone it, I have something that comes up. So, you know, he's on my rotation to come out and visit. So, you know, I like for other people to come out, not only because I want them to experience this, but I'm kind of selfish because I want independent validation of what we're experiencing.
Yeah, so, no, that's great.
You know, I don't give out the exact location, and I'll go ahead and apologize to your listeners. You know, I'm not doing it because I'm a butthole. Well, maybe I'm a little bit of a butthole, but, you know, that's not the primary reason. I want to try to keep this place as inviolate and as pure as possible. And it's on public property. So there's nothing that we can do to prevent people from coming there and just literally sitting on top of us while we're researching. So, you know, as long as this place continues to give us results, as long as the agency that controls this allows us to come, I'm going to keep researching it, and hopefully it'll keep producing.
Excellent. Yeah, I am very glad that you're doing it that way, because if you look at places like Skinwalker Ranch, the amount of aerospace companies and research that's going into that place has become so saturated, I'm wondering how much it affects the experiments and the data that's coming out of it, if there's too many people involved and it's, you know, kind of stirring things up in a different way. So I'm very glad you're doing it that way. Now, speaking of the techniques that you're using, what kind of equipment are you using? Walk us through a little bit about how you do your investigations and the kind of things that you're using.
You know, I try to be. I have a foot in two camps, and I was invited to join SCU, about a year and a half ago. And during the interview process, I told them, I said, if you're looking for a completely science guy, I'm not it. I try to keep a foot in both camps, and part of that's because of my schooling, with experiential in humanistic psychology, is the empirical data is really important. Okay, to that end, we carry FLIR, thermal vision. We carry regular cameras, psionics, night vision, Generation 3, military night vision goggles, night vision devices. We carry tri-field meters to detect, various emanations of electromagnetic energy. We carry Geiger counters. And we also record all of this stuff. We have a base camp operator who is also our radio net control operator that's keeping an active log as we go through our expedition. But just as important as that is we have the human beings and their experiences. So I got the empirical and the experiential. Now, the experiential is just as important, and I'll tell you why. I can have the most complex array looking at something, looking at an area. That doesn't help me if the phenomena happens behind me or if I don't have the right equipment to bring out there because this area is remote and we literally have to man pack everything we take out there. So we have to be very judicious on the equipment we take out. So probably the best equipment you have for detecting something is your head and your heart. You see something, you hear something, but in your heart, you also maybe experience it on a much different level. Part of that comes from, myself and a lot of my team are trained as remote viewers. We've been trained in traditional coordinate remote viewing established by SRI and, the DIA and stuff. Not that we are not military remote viewers, but we were trained in that same kind of methodology. And so I think we're maybe a little bit tuned in where maybe your average person walking down the street isn't, your average person who's, focused on their phone and never looks up and experiences the world. So we try to split that difference between empirical and experiential. I've had some amazing, experiential events. And I've also got some amazing footage and documentation. And what we try to do is bring the best methods from different disciplines and put those tools in our toolbox. Two of the things that we've used to a lot of success, one is the Estes method, which is for anybody familiar with paranormal research, it's where you take a ghost box, the receiver puts on a set of sound-canceling headphones, they're blindfolded, and their instructions are whatever comes through the ghost box, just repeat the word. So if you hear, snodgrass, whatever, you just say snodgrass, or rutabaga, you say rutabaga. And then the questioner or interrogator is asking questions unbeknownst to the person who's the receiver, who's actually relaying this information. So that's a tool and a technique from the paranormal world that we have brought forward into this type of research, which is pretty unique. Another thing that we've used is dowsing rods. Take traditional dowsing rods, and some of my folks are trained in dowsing, and use that. And we've had some remarkable things like that. As recently as February, just a few weeks ago, we had our Geiger counter placed on the ground there at the meadow. And the usual background radiation of the meadow is about 0.06 microsieverts per hour. That's about normal. And while we were doing this, this dowsing, is the dowser said, can you raise the radiation up to 0.13? And to our surprise, the Geiger counter started creeping up and then stopped at 0.13 microsieverts per hour.
Wow.
Remarkable. One of the highest readings. Yeah. Not the highest reading, but one of the highest readings we've had there. So we bring these tools, out of our very broad toolbox into the meadow, something we have just started on. And I'm talking about like very recently, is we have acquired a Koran helmet, or some people call it a God helmet.
God, yes. Excellent.
Yeah. So That's it right there. You can see all the
Yeah.
electrodes. So, that was developed by Dr. Michael Kurtzinger and Stanley Coren, who, and if people aren't familiar with it, you basically take very, 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 very weak fields of electromagnetic radiation, magnetic radiation, and you, there's a couple of ways to do it. One is a circular thing and stimulating both sides of the hemisphere as the fields rotate. Another one is it bounces back and forth, left brain, right brain, stimulating your right hippocampus, your right amygdala, and then back and forth, but ending up with a stimulation of your left amygdala to create mystic experiences. So, we have just like literally just started with that. So, what we're hoping on that is, between the remote viewing training and now, especially the stimulation of the amygdala, that we will be even more receptive. Our frequency will be, even wider, that we can pick up multiple signals. So, it's an exciting time. We, sadly, we're self-funded, so, when we write the check for the God helmet and programming and cables and all of that, it's like, holy smokes, But it's an adventure, and we are not stagnant, in our research methods or our philosophy on this thing, and we're going to continue to move forward.
Excellent, man. Now, as far as the God helmet goes, you said you recently just started using this. Do you have any data or have you done any experiments that you could talk about with it?
Well, we I've been going through several sessions with it. What I've experienced, now this has been at home, not actually out in the meadow, is a slight feeling of physical disassociation, almost like just, and if you've ever had an OBE, out of body experience, and I'm going to try to articulate this. Those of you who have, that are listening, that have had these experiences know what I'm talking about, but there's a time, there's a feeling when you feel like your spirit, your astral body just start to kind of pull away from your physical body. It's almost like you're still attacked by, taffy or, silly putty or something. You're just starting to pull. I've had those experiences, and I've also had an experience which is very odd of falling, but not, not terror, but just like falling down a tunnel or a shaft. And that's particularly while the left amygdala is being stimulated, during this these sessions. We were able to test one individual, have him go through a session out in the field last February. So that's the one time we've done it. We haven't really had any earth-shattering results. Part of the challenge has been taking this system, and making it field deployable. Having the right battery pack that can provide, power to all the different equipment, also that we can actually go out and deploy with it. So, we're still working with that. I think it could yield some amazing results. And if nothing else, it'll help people with their own spiritual and cognitive growth. So, there's really no downside.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that. My friend Ryan Burns, who you're probably familiar with, he's
I was getting ready to mention Ryan.
he does the Skinwalker and area research in the Uinta Basin, and they use something called an Ondulamp, and I'm not sure if you're familiar with that. It's like supposed to mimic the effects of DMT within a certain radius of this equipment, which I find very interesting that they're using there. You guys aren't using anything like that, are you?
No. I mean, it's no, not yet. When I say not yet, I mean if something yields, and I that's actually one of the things I've been meaning to talk to Ryan, because he and I've discussed some of the experimental stuff they're doing out there at Space Wolf, and so we bounce stuff off of each other, and I've been meaning to call him. So Ryan, if you're listening, I apologize, I just haven't gotten around to calling him yet, but I think that these places are so special. And I think you have to go into it, as I alluded to earlier, not looking for the nuts and bolts. And I am absolutely convinced, as are several people that are, really seriously doing research, is if you're looking for, something that's physical, if you think the Tic Tac, you see, on the video is actually only a physical object, I think you're missing probably about 90% of the situation. You're seeing the one part of it that manifests in our physical world, into our dimension. That there's a whole extra dimensional part of this thing that probably is much more interesting than the little tiny bit that we're seeing. So I think you have to go into it with that attitude. and start looking at things, from a multidimensional perspective. And John Keel, you know, when he was doing a lot of the research and started experiencing and encountering the mysterious Indrid Cold, you know, back during the Point Pleasant, you know, situation, the Mothman prophecy stuff, he started calling these entities ultra-terrestrials.
Yeah.
And so I've kind of taken, you know, Keel's attitude towards that, because he was very much of a multidisciplinarian. And I've changed a little bit. And the term I use is paradimensionals. They're outside of our dimension. And so these paradimensional entities, I think, are probably the same phenomena. They're responsible for what people call ghosts, what people call, you know, EBEs, extraterrestrial biological entities. You know, what people call perhaps even Sasquatch, that we're all dealing with the same phenomena, but we're all seeing maybe different aspects of it.
Yes. And there's some that theorize that it could be some sort of overarching consciousness that manifests to each different person depending on their own perception or what the phenomena wants us to perceive of it. What do you think about that?
I think that's great. You know, people, you know, are like, oh, you know, we just came up with this concept. Old book, Gods of Aquarius, okay? Mm-hmm. Brad Steiger, this old book. He talks about it in here.
Yeah.
He talks about, you know, how apparitions and, you know, things, you know, they're thought forms. You know, they can be, we project what we want to see. And it all has to do with our normalcy bias. Something I struggle with personally, you know, and my team struggle with. And anybody that's serious about this, you know, has to address this own, you know, preconceived view of the universe. Is whenever we see something, human nature, and this is, you know, this is years of evolution, is we try to put it in a context that we understand and can appreciate and can deal with. So, you know, if you hear a roar and you see the flash of something black and orange, and you're in India, you're going to say, that's probably a tiger. Maybe I better beat feet out of here. That's a survival mechanism. We take bits of data. We put it together. We try to come up with a holistic picture, and then we react to it. That can be a downfall. You know, we see something or hear something, and we automatically say, oh, well, that's, you know, that's a flying saucer. You know, that's somebody jumping in there, you know, a galactic Cadillac cruising over here from Zeta Reticuli. And it's nuts and bolts. You know, we know nothing of the sort. We just know what we experience. You know, that's a demon, you know, because I'm maybe looking at something through my cultural or religious, normalcy bias. And we just have to be really careful on that. You know, I think that limits a lot of people. That's getting better. It used to be whenever I would talk to Bigfoot people and they're like, you know, don't talk about that paranormal stuff going on around Bigfoot. But then people would come up to me secretly and say, you know, let me tell you what happened to me. I had orbs, you know, I had ghosts, I had things touch me that weren't there. I had Bigfoot tracks start in a field, walk a distance, and then disappear. Okay, well, that sounds a lot like what ghost people are experiencing. So I think now, you know, people in the field are starting to be a little bit more receptive to maybe, you know, crawling up the edge of their normalcy box and kind of peeking out and say, oh, well, there's a lot of other stuff going on out there. Maybe I need to stick my head out of my normalcy box a little bit more. So I think we're right on the verge of that. It's almost like a renaissance in high strangeness research. And I use the term high strangeness because it's everything. Mm. It's everything that's strange and odd. And I think it's really cool that researchers, and I'm going to go out on a limb here, by extension, the media are calling attention to these places. Now, some people say, you know, the media has, you know, actually ruined research in this field. I have a little bit different attitude. Is now that people are exposed to this, you know, wow, there's this strange place in Utah, you know, called Skinwalker Ranch. There's this, you know, there's a book about a strange place somewhere in America's, you know, Southland. There's all these interviews that, you know, these researchers are saying. I think people are coming to the conclusion that, you know what? These places are not exclusive. They're not maybe as rare as we think. Maybe there's one in my backyard, and all I have to do is open my eyes, do a little bit of research, and I can go out there and experience that myself, which will lead to a greater, sense of our place in the universe. So I think that's kind of a positive thing. You know, people take the data and the information in the right vein.
Yeah. I think it's fascinating what's happening right now in the whole paranormal realms and the fact that people, that researchers are coming together and comparing notes more. I think this is a direction we've been needing to head for a very long time. Now, last time you were on, you discussed some of the strange happenings that are occurring there, such as portals, black cube manifestations, cryptid creatures. Now, is there anything new that's happened since we last spoke that you could tell us about?
Oh, yeah.
Love to hear it.
Lots of stuff. One of the, you talked about the cube or the portal. What I've discovered, we have not encountered another cube-like structure. But what I have found in my research are cubes are prevalent, absolutely prevalent, all throughout the history of paranormal and high strangeness research. I don't know if you got to see the excellent documentary 411, The UFO Connection, that David Pilates put out.
But that's on my list for sure.
There's a part of it. There's a case called the Higdon case in Utah, and I think it's Medicine Bow National Forest in Wyoming. Wyoming or Utah, one or the other. Might be Wyoming. Yeah, Wyoming, not Utah. I had Utah on the brain. In Wyoming. And during the recreation of that is they show a translucent cube in the forest, which is what Mr. Higdon saw back, I believe, in the 70s. It's when they showed that during the documentary, my jaw hit the floor. And I quickly got on the computer and I sent this to, the message to Katie Page. And I said, hey, does this look familiar? And she's like, oh, my goodness. Yes, that's exactly what you're talking about. So a lot of cubes, of course, cubes were talked about in the Uinta Basin. I'm hearing about, cubes in other places. So that's really kind of neat. Some of the interesting thing that's happened is the evolution of the phenomena that we've had. And before I get into that, I just had an epiphany. Let me go back to something, to one of the more strange things. Is you remember me earlier talking about the mysterious woman in black, the strange businesswoman of the forest?
Yes.
That sounds, prima facie, that sounds very strange, which it was very strange.
Now, could you remind the audience a little bit about that before you get into it?
Yeah, I'll do a really quick recap. The evening back in, I'm going to look at my notes here, back in February 2017, when we encountered the cube-like thermal signature that we sent our team into, and their thermal signatures disappeared.
Yeah.
I'm going to call it a portal because they their reality was shifted just a few degrees, left or right. The frequency was off just a little bit. When we came out of the field that night, and our main task was to set up a video camera, do a video after action report. But when we got there, there was this businesswoman waiting for us. February in the middle of the forest, about 10:30 in the evening or 22:30 hours, cold. And there's a businesswoman wearing loafers, slacks, a blouse, and a blazer. And she immediately latches onto us and wants us to drop what she was doing or what we were doing and follow her to a deserted county road to look at something called monkey bears. Now, I'll go down a deserted road for a bag of gummy bears, but I don't know about monkey bears. I don't know what those are. But and we just kept trying to, thank you, have a good evening, not be rude, but, put those social cueings out there that, we're doing something else, have a safe drive home, blah, blah. And much to our chagrin, she squats down and urinates in front of us.
Yeah.
Which, that's not how normal people interact.
Now she also knew a good bit of information that she shouldn't have known, right?
Yeah. That's where it really gets odd is, while she was trying to discuss with me and convince me to, follow her in search of these elusive monkey bears, she said, what college did you go to? And I said, the University of West Jordan. She goes, well, I did too. I'm like, okay. And she said, what's your degree in? And I said, I have a BA in psychology with a minor in anthropology. She goes, I have a degree in psychology from there too. I'm like, okay, she's messing with me. So I thought, I'll be Mr. Smart Pants and I'll trick her. I'll catch her. said, who are some of your favorite professors there? And she started naming people I actually knew, personally knew. So it's like, okay, this is, you know, by this time I'm like, okay, I'm significantly weirded out by this. And so we finally get her to leave. You know, we do our action review. We took some of the footage of the portal, put it into a RV, not RV, RF protected bag, put it on a motorcycle and sent it, many, many miles away. But where it gets odd is when I started doing some research on this woman or this experience. It's like, okay, there you have people that are improperly dressed for an occasion or a situation, trying to thwart people and keep them from relaying their experiences who have experienced high strangeness. They don't understand social cueing and they seem off. You know, what do we call these people? They're men and women in black. Mm-hmm. So that's kind of what was, resonating with me. And it would be strange enough if we just said, oh, I was a woman in black. But she actually gave us a name. And we did some data mining. And we found a person in social media that matches her, a real person. Huh. And the profession this person, articulated that they were involved in matched with their social media profile. So this was either a real person or someone mimicking a real person, a doppelganger, if you would. So fast forward several years later, I get a message from a psychotherapist in Istanbul, Turkey. Okay. Out of the blue. And this guy, also attended University of West Georgia. And he says, hey, I want to ask you if you know anything about something called the Carrollton Vortex. Did y'all research that while you were there? And I said, well, no, I didn't. He goes, well, Dr. Roll, look into it later. And I was just wondering if you knew anything about it. And I said, no, I don't. I'm sorry. And he goes, hey, let me ask you about that strange woman. He says, would you mind giving me her name? And I said, well, first of all, I don't want anyone to get in trouble, her strange behavior. I don't want it to impact her license to exercise her profession in that state, whichever state she was from. So, I'm not interested in anything like that. And he goes, no. He goes, I might know her. I'm curious to see if, somebody that I know. He goes, would you mind giving me her name? I said, no, her name is Jane Doe. And he goes, oh my goodness, I think I know her. I said, that's interesting. He said, would you mind if I contacted her? I said, no, I don't mind at all. I said, matter of fact, if you do make contact, I would love to interview her. And I'm not interested in, outing her or anything like that. I need to try to get to the bottom of this experience because it was so uncanny. So he did contact her. She, wasn't interested in talking to me, but she did talk to him. And what she said is she does remember the event. And what she recalls is driving around in the forest after a rather hectic day, doing it, whatever it is she does. And she saw, and I don't remember the details, it was either a sticker on somebody's truck or something that had like a picture of a Bigfoot, like a something. And she thought, oh, I need to tell these people about my monkey bears. Now, usually whenever I have some woman tell me, I want to tell you or show you my monkey bears, it ends up as a very bad date, and a lot of cheap wine, and a lot of regret the next morning. But this obviously was not that. Everybody, y'all can laugh at that. That's I'm here all week. Don't forget yeah. Don't forget to tip your bartenders and servers. Thank you.
Definitely.
No. But anyway, so he thought, I'm gonna relay this to these folks, and maybe they'll think it's interesting or whatever. And so she remembers that. And my friend, the psychotherapist, says, do you remember anything unusual about that evening? And she says, well, I remember approaching them. They seemed very busy, especially when they came out of the field. They didn't seem too interested in talking to me, and they seemed like they were trying to hide or cover something up, which is accurate. We just had this amazing experience, and we wanted to try to keep it as close hold at the time as possible. He said, do you remember anything else? And she goes, no, I just remember getting in my vehicle and leaving. So she completely blocked out the urination thing.
Now, when she actually urinated, she was there any kind of strange behavior before, or did she just kind of drop trowel and start peeing?
She, was talking, and then she just kind of stopped and backed away, maybe 20, 30 meters, still within the light of our campsite,
yeah,
and dropped trow and, went to work.
Yeah.
Just very strange, because there was actually a field latrine within visual distance of that. I mean, it's like, well, there's a field latrine.
Yeah.
Can I use your latrine? Well, no. So she doesn't remember any of that. So I went back and I started kind of reevaluating maybe what we think and what we believe we know about the women and men in black is, is it possible? Let me pause right there. And my friend, the psychotherapist, said, he goes, that's very interesting, because when we were at university, and we would do some of the more, interesting, psychological and paranormal stuff, she was one that was always very attuned and very much super receptive to stuff. And he says, if something was to gain control of a person, she had the type of, psychological DNA that would make her very receptive to that. So, looking at men in black now, women in black, are these actual real people that are controlled or influenced by some other entity or outside force?
That's
so it's kind of made me rethink the way, I look at the whole, man and woman in black thing. And maybe there's, and that's even maybe a little bit more interesting than a, a plastic humanoid android coming down and, interacting with you. It makes it more interesting. But on the other side of it, maybe it makes it a little more terrifying that maybe we're not always, in control of what we think we are.
Yeah, so that is so interesting.
So that's kind of an update on the man and woman in black. And I'll go into that in the next book, in great detail.
Yeah. Now, did you ever find any monkey bears anywhere?
The interesting thing is monkey bears, the way she described these things is they were almost like, Sasquatch or Bigfoot. And we have, some photographic, we believe evidence of, large humanoids, watching our camp. We've had, one of our team members, got up to take care of some personal business at 0200 in the morning. And as he was standing there taking care of that business next to a tree, he saw a humanoid, peek out from behind a tree. And in the Bigfoot world, they call them tree peepers. They look out and kind of check you out and go back. We've had a lot of, if you want to call it, monkey bear experiences, Sasquatch experiences, cryptid experiences there. Mm-hmm. The area is just absolutely rife with reports of cryptids. I mean, just tons of them. As recently as, I believe in February, there was one in that area that was reported. So it's a very rich area. So we've experienced possibly what she considers monkey bears. Yeah, absolutely.
Now, you were saying earlier how you believe much of this phenomena is somewhat metaphysical and not a nuts and bolts thing. Do you think that there are physical aspects, like some of these creatures that have physical properties to them, or just, are physical humanoids, but maybe understand a new state of matter to where they can manipulate it or change our perception or even go through portals?
Yeah, that's a great question. I'll do an analogy, okay? And I think most of us realize, maybe, not with our thinking side of our brain, but maybe our intuitive part of the brain, that there's more to us than this meat puppet. Okay. And those of us that have really looked into it and have had some training, either in the, Monroe Institute or, coordinate remote viewing or, the Silva technique or anything like that, is we understand that human beings are multidimensional creatures. And the cool thing is science is now starting to support that. There was a paper that I read, I think earlier this week, that scientists believe death is an illusion. It doesn't really exist. And it's like, well, heck, I knew that. You're not telling me anything I didn't already know. So, human beings are multidimensional creatures that we can, with training, insight, and sometimes perhaps a little bit of luck, we can break the bounds of our three-dimensional world and reach out into that ether, pull data, influence things, or whatever. Well, is it so inconceivable that perhaps what we call Sasquatch is a multidimensional creature too? And maybe, part of their brain or part of their consciousness has mastered that perhaps a bit more than we have. And that goes back to what I talked about earlier of, people reporting seeing Sasquatch, track lines, footprints start, in a field, travel a distance, and then stop. Like something was dropped in, traveled a distance, and then was lifted out. I have seen some video taken in the Uwari National Forest of a entity or creature running, behind a tree, and it never comes out the other side. It disappears. I've seen that footage with my own eyes. I've seen some other evidence of that. So I think, we really have to start looking at that as a holistic type of phenomenon, and not run around and bang our chest and yell to the world it's nothing but a gigantopithecus. I think we're really missing part of it. It's interesting if you go back and read some of the earlier texts. I mentioned John Keel and Brad Steiger. They talk about hominids being located at the place of UFO sighting. So it's like the two are not mutually exclusive. And there's a, let's see if I can find the picture in here. This is Brad Steiger's book. This was written, a long time ago. And he actually talks about the hominid being a type of possibly an extraterrestrial at that time. They were looking at EBEs. So, I think we need to maybe step back and look at what we think we know and maybe focus on what we possibly can know in the future and not box ourselves. Once again, in our normalcy box, I'm a cryptid researcher and it's nothing but a big hairy ape that, you can poke with a stick. Maybe look at, things a little broader.
Now, why do you think these areas have so much concentrated activity? Do you have any theories onto what's going on? Is it the properties underground? Is it something else? Why do you think that there are some areas that have more concentrated paranormal activity than others?
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not going to lie to anybody. I have no idea. I can throw some theories out there, and I'm going to use an analogy because I think that, seems to work a little bit better. I want people to imagine the wind. Okay, the wind is a natural phenomenon. So there's three ways we can look at some of these phenomena is like the wind. Either A, it's a natural phenomena that just occurs, and it's transient. It sometimes occurs more frequently at certain locations, perhaps due to attributes we don't understand. The second thing is maybe there's an intelligence that are harnessing these attributes to their own ends, i.e., we build sailboats. We're harnessing the wind to move us from point A to point B. Maybe there's some, paradimensional entity that's harnessing this natural phenomena to their own ends. Maybe they're harnessing it to make portals. Maybe they're harnessing it to influence people on the ground. Maybe they're harnessing it to create men and women in black from actual human beings. And the third thing is it's artificial. It's totally artificially generated. Like we can generate wind with wind machines, like for films and stuff. We can make artificial wind called a fan. And so maybe there is some entity creating these artificial situations which manifest in our dimension as high strangeness for reasons we don't even understand. I think the otherness of whatever these intelligences are, I think is so vast. They're so different from us that we might not ever understand their machinations. We probably can't even grasp what they're actually trying to do.
Now, I can't really remember at the moment, but does this area also experience cattle mutilations?
I have not. There have been reported cattle mutilations in this region. I have not encountered any cattle or wildlife mutilations personally. That doesn't mean anything. I might not be at the right place at the right time, but no. Two things that we're not experiencing is I don't see a lot of animal mutilations, and much of James Keehan's chagrin is I'm not detecting any geomagnetic anomalies. Every once in a
Interesting.
while, it will appear that our magnetic compasses are not true. But then again, this area has a lot of iron ore, in the soil, and it has a lot of quartz. So you'll actually see, you know, balls of quartz sitting on the surface in rock formations and rock form. So, but, you know, not the same crazy kind of geomagnetic anomaly you see at some of these other places. But what we do see is spikes in radiation whenever, not every time, but oftentimes when we have an event of high strangeness, as we'll see these spikes in radiation. So, you know, for us, the radiation has been the real indicator of occurring or about to occur events of high strangeness. And I'll give some examples of that. I talked about the spike in the radiation when we were doing the dowsing. Okay. Several years ago, I was in the meadow with a research partner, and she and I were going around taking base readings of areas where we've, you know, we've encountered detected hominoids, you know, on our FLIR. You know, we had the portal or the cube, and just some other areas, and we were taking EMF baselines, radiation baselines, temperature baselines, and we got to a point. We decided we were going to cross a creek, and somehow I ended up where I started from, and thought I was in an entirely different new meadow or field, but I had somehow started. Crossed the creek, and when I got to the other side, I was back where I started.
Huh.
We had a radiation spike at that time of 0.33 microsieverts per hour. That coincided, and strangely enough, just before that event happened, we detected a very unusually low-flying aircraft. Passed right over us. It was so low that the base camp operator actually wrote in their log, extremely low-flying aircraft just overflew camp. Turn the page. A few years later, we were camping at another location, and I talked about this phenomenon. Not, you know, is regional. Is we had a base camp operator who was there by themselves, and they heard, and I'm going to describe it as a craft. That's the only word I can use. Is we were about maybe 40 meters away from a dirt road that goes to this area. And he heard the very distinctive sound of a tires on a gravel road. But yet he saw no headlight. He saw no structure. He just heard it. Now, the only way you can drive down this road at night is if you just happen to be out there tootling along, joyriding, with a set of military-grade night vision goggles driving in the dark. But what gets really weird is when this craft passed by the base camp, his Geiger counter spiked like to 0.66 microsieverts per hour. And we have a photograph of the actual Geiger counter. So radiation, you know, radiation seems to be the thing that's really the indicator for us. Not so much, you know, geomagnetic or, you know, some of the other things that people have discovered at other sites. But for us, it seems to be radiation.
Wow. That's so interesting. Now, this phenomena also seems to mimic people, animals, everyday occurrences, equipment, technology, and from what researchers like Ryan Burns have told me, that some of the aerospace and military industrial type of entities that are out there doing experiments, that at times have reported that the phenomena will not only mimic certain technology, like it'll mimic a plane, a vehicle or something like that, it will not only mimic that, but it will one-up it and do something that is beyond the capabilities of that certain technology. And it seems that this intelligence always is four or five or more steps ahead of whatever the researchers or experiments that's going on. Now, have you witnessed anything like this or mimicking of strange animals or humanoids or anything like that?
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, the incident I just referred to, it mimicked a vehicle, an automobile driving down this dirt road, but with no lights, you know, which, you know, I mean, just, I'm not going to say it's impossible. I mean, I could take my truck and buy, you know, infrared, you know, spotlights to put on the front and drive with my, you know, my Gen 3 night vision. Yeah, I could, but it's highly unlikely I'm going to encounter somebody out there tootling around in the national forest. Or not the National Forest, but in the nature preserve. So, you know, it's, you know, mimicking like that. We've had one situation where we heard a cat. And this sounds crazy, but it sounded like a house cat just out there meowing. We've heard one of the really strange things is if you read Ron Moorhead's book, The Sierra Sounds, and listen to the audio recordings, that strange mumbling, we've heard that before. We've heard disembodied voices. Several people have heard disembodied voices saying strange things like time travel was actually something that was spoken to one of our team members from a disembodied voice. We've had psychological downloads, people that will have a term pop into their mind while they're asleep. And we've had hitchhikers, the hitchhiker phenomena. As
Tell us a
recently
little
as
bit
October.
about the some of the
Oh,
hitchhikers you've had.
yeah, this is where it gets a little weird. Is one of our team members, she had to leave camp early before we experienced the portal or the queue. So she left earlier that afternoon. When she got home, she was recording her son on a playing on an elliptical machine. You know, he's a little kid playing, you know, on an elliptical machine. And he kept pointing up in the, you know, up in the air, you know, in the room, saying ball, ball, ball. And she looked on her viewfinder and she could see an orb flying around the room that he was pointing at. And she took her phone down, looked, couldn't see it with the naked eye, put it back up, could see it with the telephone. So there was a technology that could be used to detect this this strange phenomenon, this orb, if you will. Something else that's happened that's very strange with a hitchhiker is I've had physical objects, you know, at home, and in my case, it happened to be a little tiny LED flashlight in this room I'm in now. I set it down on my desk and was doing stuff, and I turned around and it was gone. And I'm like, well, dang it, I must have knocked it over or it rolled up under the couch or something. So I, you know, just being compulsive, you know, I tore the place up looking for it, you know, for a $3 flashlight, which seems kind of silly. But anyway, I couldn't find it. So, you know, frustrated and, you know, I hate to be beat and stuff like that, you know, it's a challenge and I was skunked. I went to bed, came back the next morning, and the light was exactly where I had placed it. You know, it had remanifested right there where I put it. We've had people have strange leaving the meadow. Their GPSs will take them back to where they started. It'll take them in like circles and they'll end right back up where they started. And this is where it gets a little kind of out there is I've actually had a team member who has had dreams about entities coming into her room. She's had physical marks on her body and she's had her car mysteriously die, all electrical aspects of her automobile completely die, and then all of a sudden come back on.
Oh, wow.
We had a film crew with us in October, and if you will bear with me, I'm going to read you an excerpt from what this film crew said. We were doing the producer and director actually wanted to do an Estes session. And he said during his Estes session, he kept seeing, having visions of apocalyptic things, you know, babies covered in blood, flames, things like that. And two of the terms that came out, you know, during the Estes session were Nephilim and witch were two of the words that that came out. So,
Wow.
and so he sent me a text. He said, while his film crew, and this is a professional film crew, this is a cinematographer and production assistant, were watching this, is they saw shadow creatures, shadow beings, you know, during this this encounter.
Wow.
And I want to pull up exactly what he said because it's a little strange what he said, and hopefully I'll be able to pull it up here.
Now,
Okay.
while you're looking for
Yeah.
that,
Yeah.
I'm wondering if this phenomena is just like us and humanity, where there's a duality to it, to where there could be a level of malevolence or lower frequency consciousness, and then there's a
Right.
level of higher frequency where it is more of a benevolent type of entity. What do you
Right.
think?
I think you might be right. You know, Mike Rickenstocker has done a lot of work on shadow people. And I'm, you know, I'm going to pick his brain here in a few months. I don't think we should necessarily, once again, our normality box book, the shadow, shadows are dark. If it's dark, it must be evil, then it must be a demon. So, ergo, I'm being attacked by demons. I think that's, you have to take it a little bit more holistically. But I did find it. And this is what actually came from the director. He said, "So I've been able to speak with my others about what they saw." He mentioned that his film crew was very unnerved by this experience. He said, quote, "It was reported that while we were doing the Estes event, a shadowy, nearly invisible being would hover around me. It would appear to try to enter me and come back out. This happened several times and eventually went in and either didn't come out or vanished. All I can remember from the event are images of destruction and these weird images of dead babies covered in blood. The shadow
Jeez.
being was reportedly somewhat humanoid with a partial body and the head of a person said to resemble somebody wearing a hood." He said that does seem and does seem to corroborate what others have seen when they describe shadow people. So this is multiple witnesses, describing this situation while we're doing an Estes session. Turn the page. The cinematographer that was witnessing this got home and started having paranormal activity at his house right after this. So, we are just absolutely rife with the hitchhiker phenomena, which is really interesting because in the book Skinwalkers at the Pentagon, I started reading that after some of this stuff happened, and I'm like, well, they're actually articulating, what we're experiencing. So there seems to be some commonality, in experiences among these different areas of high strangeness. Something else that's evolved, and this is a bit unnerving, is in another field, not the meadow, but another field that we've been doing some research in. We actually have had people touched, physically touched by unseen forces. And one of these was what we call the infamous Bohawkus incident, which is one of my team members was sitting in her field chair and had her Bohawkus grabbed, had her rear end grabbed.
Yeah.
And
Wow.
so and so and what where it gets really weird is you would think that's a one-off thing is Katie Page was there with a traveling companion, and her traveling companion had their hoodie pulled, like something grabbed the tip of their hoodie and pulled it. There wasn't anything around. So this phenomena is actually starting to manifest and physically interact with us, not just psychologically interact with us, by implanting terms into our brains or interacting with us with Estes, but now we're starting to see some physical manifestation, which is taking things to a whole new level.
Now, have you guys implemented any type of spiritual protection? Are you concerned that any malevolent entities may have some sort of power, like you were just saying, being able to touch you? That's kind of concerning, and you might want to have some protection for that, right?
We basically buy these giant Trojan condoms and protect us. No, we don't. I'm making that up. No. Yeah, we all walk around with giant condoms over ourselves. No. That is something that I encourage my team, and I'm not going to be a draconian on belief systems. Everybody has their own belief system. I have a very strong belief system that I don't talk about a whole lot, but it's a very important part of my life. And I feel like I'm protected. And that's something that I always warn people is, this type of research is not without danger. We've had people die in our team suddenly. We have a team member whose cancer has come back with a vengeance.
Jeez.
We've had a team member whose very serious respiratory issues have started to take place. We had a team member we actually had to literally medevac out of the field because in the middle of the night they started having strange heart palpitations and they spent the night in the hospital. So we actually had to put them in a vehicle and drive them to the hospital and medevac them out of our area. So it's not without a certain degree of danger. A lot of people's health has been affected by this.
Right on.
What's interesting is there have been things that have happened recently in the field that have been studied by you know, by some very good researchers, and my mind's coming up blank right now. But, you know, with the effects of physical effects that have taken place on people that have encountered high strangeness, military people and civilians who have encountered UAPs, Gary Nolan just came to me. Dr. Gary Nolan has done some studies on the brains of people who have encountered UAPs. And there's some evidence that there are MS-like lesions on their brain. The military, DOD, has released a report, the DIA, and I just sent that report to to some folks in the field, that shows that some military members have also experienced physical effects of these encounters. Now, what's interesting is they talk about these things being like radiation burns. Okay, some of the physical effects. Something that's very close to a radiation burn is something called an RF burn, or radio frequency burn, which isn't ionized radiation like gamma radiation, but it's radio frequency. If you go and you start researching, like in the Uinta Basin, what is one of the things that they've recorded? Energy, radio energy in the 1.6 gigahertz range. Mm. There's something called the Frey effect at about the 1.3 gigahertz range that causes actual audible sensations to people that have been exposed to this type of radiation, this RF radiation. So we also have the Havana effect, or Havana syndrome, which American diplomats and military personnel have experienced all over the world.
Yeah.
Once again, is it something between the 1.2-ish to 1.7 gigahertz range? I don't know. That also seems to be a factor, is something about radio frequency at these areas of high strangeness. So, there are physical effects, absolutely. And, anybody getting into this business, I would be remiss and negligent if I didn't warn people about that they really need to be, cognizant of that, and, take their own health considerations into account when they go out there and start, start looking into this.
Yeah, 100%. Now, the last few minutes we have, is there anything new that you're about to be embarking on? I know that you have a couple of conferences that you'll be going to, Ozark Mountain UFO, Phenomicon. Yeah, tell us about anything you got going on upcoming.
Upcoming is my publisher is actually beating me about the head and neck for a second book. I've started on the outline of it. I started doing some research. Hopefully it'll be really intriguing. I'm excited about it. The first part of the book, part one, will be called Congruences, which I will be looking into places like the Bradshaw Ranch, Mount Wilson, which is Robert Bigelow's first place he bought before Skinwalker Ranch. Of course, the mysterious ranch in Colorado that Katie Page is so intimately involved in, Marley Woods, things like that, and go into some of the similarities, of these sites, because, my site's not in a vacuum. It's part of a much larger phenomenon. Mm-hmm. Second part is going to be called, updates, where basically I tell people about some of the unique things that have happened to us. Recently we just had an amazing UAP sighting, last month at the Meadow, the strange phenomena with the dowsing rod. So kind of update people on some of our newer investigations, what we've encountered then with them, and, kind of where we're headed in the future. And then the third part is going to be called Revelations. This is the part that I'm most excited about, is I have actually linked up with a psychotherapist and hypnotherapist. And some of my team members who have had the most unique and unnerving experiences are going to go through hypnoregression, much like Bud Hopkins or John Mack. So that kind of stuff. And I'm actually going to be recording these sessions, and hopefully we'll be able to have, actual, no kidding, transcripts, because I believe there's much more than meets the eye with some of our experiences. So that's what I'm getting ready to really start working on earnestly. Awesome. And so, hopefully I'll be able to get it done here before too long.
Excellent. And you've got a couple of conferences, Ozark Mountain UFO and Phenomicon, right?
Yes, yes. Cool thing about that is because of some certain contractual obligations, I have not been able to widely publicly share, some of the videos and stuff I have. At these conferences, I am free to share it. So, you know, anybody that wants to come down to Eureka Springs next month, or head out to Vernal, Utah in September, I will be showing, you know, the whole variety, the actual entities that we picked up on FLIR, the portal, us trying to recreate that event, and then a very, very in-depth synopsis of, you know, all the events that have happened since then, and also referred to in the book.
Excellent. Trey, this was fantastic. We're going to definitely have to do this again, get some more updates soon. Before you head out, let everyone know where they can find your books, social media, all your online presence.
Sure. The book is basically in any format you would like. It's hardcover, softcover, ebook, and audiobook. The best place to go is to go to Amazon and type in my name, Trey Hudson, or The Meadow Project, Explorations into the South Skinwalker Ranch. I'm very proud to say that we have published it in French. So it is now an international book. So it's now hitting the shelves in France. So if anybody parle beau français, you know, pick up a French version of it. The best place to find me is behind the alley in the local liquor store, living in a cardboard box. No, I'm kidding. No, that's not where I am. You can go to Facebook and go to Trey Hudson Author, and that's where I hang out. You know, if you have any questions or comments, you know, shoot me a message. Be gentle, although my feelings are hurt very easily, and I'm very sensitive. No, I'm not. But, you know, just anybody, just jump in there and, you know, comment. I love to hear from people. So, and I hope to see you all around, you know, either at a conference or somewhere else. So, everybody keep your eyes open, because the world is a whole lot stranger than you think.
Oh, yes, it is. Excellent, Trey. This was fantastic. We'll do it again soon. And until next time, everyone have an excellent evening. We'll talk again next week, because this will be my last show of the week. I'll be traveling for docuseries production for a little over a week, so we'll be putting up some classic episodes in the meantime, and I'll see you guys the following week, and hopefully we'll have some good stuff to show you after our trip. So we'll see you guys then.